Blog Talk Radio.
See the aristocrat pulling rabbits from his hat. Oh, well, I didn't know it worked like that. Sounds great until you do the math. And now people waking up, poking heads out of their stuff. What an expensive turtle shell. It's probably just as well, because I don't want to be the machine powered by the American dream. Now the people want the truth, but the truth it can't be found. Well, it's just an artifact. To your son, and I watched as it lulled him to sleep with the hypnotic hum of the machine.
We know we're going to have fun. Like I just told our guests, we aren't going to AMA. Not even putting in. We do recycling baskets. Then we do that from on the cell phone calling in. Before the show went live, Harry can hear me. So right here, you can hear me over your headset. I don't know, fun. I'm going to check in with our guests just for a second here. I'm going to take from my naked closet, back. Are you out there live and regulating? Hey, Jack, there.
I think you're talking to me, but I can barely hear you.
Yes, I can hear you now. I can. So, how's that reception? You're not hearing me too well tonight?
No, I can just barely hear and understand what you're saying.
Yeah, I was afraid of that. Kind of sad. Hang on, let me see. Let me turn Harry's mic on. See if I can hear him any better. Harry.
Hey, can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear.
Well, that's beautiful, because the next segment is Things to Know. Know this. Now you can get bids for surgery. Thanks to the Affordable Health Care Act, capitalism and the invisible hand of the free market system is finding its way into the field of medical care. MetaBid.com. is an online service where doctors and facilities can bid for a patient's business. On its website, MetaBid encourages patients to do their homework and research their doctors' and facilities' credentials. When patients start to behave like consumers, prices go down. Know this. Tomorrow, the Supreme Court of the United States will hear oral arguments from Hobby Lobby, a nationwide chain of craft stores whose CEO objects on religious grounds to funding certain types of contraceptions under the Affordable Health Care Act. If the Supreme Court makes good on presidential candidate Mitt Romney's statements that corporations are people too, investing them with the freedom of religion, there will be no end to such claims in the court. This case, without allowing discrimination based on religion, Hobby Lobby's case wants for-profit businesses to be exempted from laws each business owner doesn't like. Make no mistakes, you can support religious liberty and still reject Hobby Lobby's argument. But a Hobby Lobby victory risks paving the way for corporations to use religion to control the lives of others and to trample the religious freedom and their right to equal treatment under the law. Know this, bacteria that causes tooth decay, acne, tuberculosis, and leprosy can be cured with cashews. Know this, Betty White is actually older than sliced bread. Know this, not once in the Humpty Dumpty nursery rhyme does it mention that he is an egg. Thank you, Marley. Well, my work for this week is done, and I hope I've earned my rent. And since my love's microphone seems to be out of sync, let it all be known that we are broadcasting tonight live from Tulsa, Oklahoma, in our RV, in an RV park. And so we think that the bandwidth of the Wi-Fi in this RV park may not be suitable for both of us talking at the same time, so it chose me. So lucky for me, and, well, oh, she's controlling the board, and I like that look. Oh, she just may cut me off as well. Okay, but tonight, ladies and gentlemen, you know, I have been privileged throughout my life to meet a lot of great people. Tonight's guest has been a friend for many years. Rob found his calling early in life and found a professional home early in his life. Dr. Rob Harris is a personal friend of mine, and he is vice president for student development at Southwest Baptist University. We ask him to be our guest tonight to address a couple of points that we believe our audience could truly benefit. Dr. Harris, now known as Dr. Harris, I used to know him when he was Robbie, but Dr. Harris knows a lot about personal issues associated with diabetes, and I want him to share that knowledge with you. Additionally, Dr. Harris has some knowledge, a lot of knowledge on mentoring and leadership, and we want him to share that also with you. So tonight he is going to bring a lot of knowledge to you. His hope is to demonstrate and encourage at least three things as he serves and builds relationships with others, especially college students. I mean, after all, he is at a university. But the first one is encourage community. Embrace and appreciate and love others. Number two, he wants to inspire hope. Number three, equip individuals for the future. And without any more further introduction, let us bring on my friend, Dr. Robert Harris.
Hey, Robert, Harry, how are you doing?
Man, I am doing so well. We were at a meeting earlier tonight. We rushed back over to the RV, got inside the RV. We had like 10 minutes left to spare. Robin gets the control board up, and next thing you know, we can't hear her on the microphone. So, unfortunately, a lot of people have to hear me tonight. How in the world are you doing?
Doing really well. Hey, up in Missouri, it's snowing right now. It's crazy. What's it doing in Tulsa?
Well, it's supposed to be freezing tonight. I don't envy that. I thought we picked a time of year to come where it'd be a little bit warmer, but we were wrong. But that's so be it. We're nice and cozy inside our RV, and we'll be up in St. Louis around April 12th. So I hope the snow is, get rid of all the snow by then. Okay, I don't want any snow.
Do my best.
So, Rob, tell us, you know, I've known you for many, many years, and you're one of the people that I really, really enjoy talking to and learning from. So tell our listener and audience, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I grew up in a small town in Oklahoma, just west of Tulsa, by the name of Bamford, Oklahoma. Grew up and graduated from the high school there, went on to college in Bolivar, Missouri. Studied business, worked in the workforce for a while and worked for the institution recruiting students. From there, I pursued my master's, continued to work, and then became a director of a recruiting department at the institution I attended. And then from there, advanced on up into higher education ranks, became a dean of students, and then finished my EDD in 2012, so just a few years ago. So I guess that's more of a short story. There's a lot of personal insight. You and I go back a long way, and I think probably the topic for this evening comes really with the seeds were planted way back when you and I first met, and really you became a mentor to me. Each of us always have several mentors growing up and things, but you were one of those key individuals in my life that just gave an education and you cared enough to help a young man, a young boy grow up to be grow up and be a man and take responsibility. So I don't know. That's a little bit about me. There's a lot more to color to all that. But what else would you like to know?
Well, I want to know two things I really want to talk on tonight, because you have, you know, your credentials, your life, your learning, your knowledge, your experiences. They lend itself to teach us mentoring, leadership, but as important, because our country, for whatever reason, is facing an obesity problem. We have some major, major health issues. And before we get into the mentoring and leadership, I want you to share a little bit about diabetes. And I'll tell you why that's important. You have personal knowledge, firsthand knowledge, and I think too oftentimes what I see in our country today, we have people, I don't know, and you're going to have to enlighten me, but I don't know if you can really self-induce diabetes, but it's becoming more and more popular for people not to be born with diabetes, but gain it as they get older. And is it what they eat? Can you enlighten me? What is with this phenomenon in our country today? And I know I caught you off guard, because that's not why I brought you on here. Because I really wanted to know about your leadership and your mentoring programs. But, you know, it just hit me last night. You have unique knowledge, and you and I have talked recently about the dangers of diabetes. And could you just share some of that with our listeners tonight?
I want to venture very carefully into this topic. Yes, experience oftentimes is our best guide, and with that, evaluated experiences are our best choice of understanding if we choose to go that route. And, you know, I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes at age 9, and unfortunately, I overheard a doctor say at that early age, and it's just because of the expanding and the advancement of technology at that time and the advancement of things, I was told that if I reached age 35, I would be very lucky. And so it was pretty much seen, not necessarily as a death sentence, but it united fear among my family and just anxiety as well. And just the pressure point of, you know, making sure that you're taking good care of yourself and doing all the right things with eating and exercise, and at that time injecting insulin. And boy, the advances have come a long way in just taking care of the body, with especially with type 1, and how that's done. I mean, it's gone from insulin pumps that are the size of a small phone to, back in those days, if they had a pump, it was about 6-8 inches long, and it's just a humongous thing, and the understanding just wasn't there. But technology has advanced so much that it makes it almost like a pancreas on the outside of your body. Well, anyway, all that to say, the advances have gone a long ways, and I'm honor to still be alive and kicking, and my family is too. but, you know, you touched on a topic that is interesting. The American Medical Association, I was looking into it about, maybe about 10, 12 years ago, and they said, you know, type 1 diabetes, there's only about a 5 to 8% chance that's hereditary. However, type 2 diabetes, the hereditary likelihood is upwards to 80, 85%. Now, granted, take those with a grain of salt and do your own research on that, because I don't know what the latest statistics are regarding that. A lot of that has to do with, I believe, with type 2 diabetes. It's just the onset of poor nutrition, lack of exercise, a lot of things, and stress, just a lot of things that, that, you know, unfortunately, Westerners or Americans face probably more of than what they used to decades ago. So that's a little bit, I want to be really cautious there, because while I've lived with type 1 diabetes, I'm not necessarily an expert on either one, type 1 or type 2.
Well, I appreciate you being humble, but, you know, I would consider you an expert because you have it, and you can give insight to those of us that know even less. And I don't want to dwell too much on this, but is it possible from your knowledge, not from a doctor's knowledge, you know, a medical doctor's knowledge, but from someone who's experienced that study? Because I remember when you were a kid and I was training you, and, you know, we were training together in the martial arts, and people were worried, well, Harry, you can't push him, and you know, you got to be careful and all that kind of stuff. And I would see that you would do all these amazing things with your body. Not only were you involved in martial arts, you were also played high school football, you played college football. And if you would have listened to all those people that told you to take it easy, you would have never played college football. And so your opinion in this area means much to me. And what I want to get at more than anything else is two things. One, never give up on your dreams. I mean, do it cautiously and do it smart, but don't give up on your dreams. But number two, I want to know, to our audience, from your perspective, is it possible for an adult, someone who's not born with diabetes, to eat their way or have a lifestyle that they create diabetes at an early age?
Yeah, I don't know, Harry. I don't. From my experience, health is extremely important. You know the old saying about you are what you eat. We unfortunately ingest a lot of things that are sometimes in our control, and sometimes they're not in our control. Do you really know what you're eating? And, you know, I don't, those things scare me, not just with diabetes, but other things that it seems like that individuals either get, like, unfortunately, like cancer and things like that. It's just like huge, vast amounts of people are getting diseases that, back 30, 40 years ago, where we're being diagnosed with all these types of items. And I just wonder how much, I just have to believe that so much of this is related to what we eat, what we drink, what we consume, our surroundings. How much is it really, you know, in our control? And so
Go ahead.
Well, can you eat your way into having something wrong with you? That's kind of an aggressive, assertive way to say it that way, but I think so. But sometimes it's not at the person who's consuming at their fault. There could be other variables in play that we're even knowledgeable of.
Well, I think you said the word, and that's what I was getting at. We'll drop this topic because I want to go on to something a little bit lighter and something you're currently involved in, but it scares you, and that's what scares me. What's in our food today does scare me. So let's move on to that, move from that, and tell us something about you enlightened me just recently about a mentoring, a leadership program, or something that you're developing there in your part of Missouri. Enlighten us. What are you doing?
I have a unique occupational role, and I have the honor to encourage students to seek a healthy life through the love of Jesus Christ. And while they're pursuing their academic degree. And with that, there are three things I like to focus on when I'm encouraging them. And you mentioned them earlier, but one is to encourage community. I think we should embrace others. We should appreciate what others bring to our lives and to the table. We should love others. I mean, I won't quote a lot of scripture tonight, but I am a believer, and I'm proud of that. But that's one of the things that Jesus taught us is to love our neighbor. And I think that's some part of encouraging community is to love each other. If we loved more of each other, if we loved children, if we loved each other more, you know, what would this world come to? You know, where would we be at? And at the same time, you mentioned earlier, inspire hope. Well, encourage people, dream big, pursue those dreams, and unleash the potential that's possessed with inside of you. You know, find those other individuals who will help you pursue and help you dream and help you think large. Think outside of your own box. I mean, what are your current dreams right now? Write them down. Look at them every day. And then once you've written them down, how much bigger can those be? Find those individuals that can inspire you and do that. And third, is to equip leaders. Teaching and broadening the perspective that leads to understanding is so important. I mean, you taught me that as my sensei. You taught me so many things growing up and just taking karate lessons from you, and that it wasn't just about the martial arts. It was about the person. It was about troll. It was about passion. It was about interest. And so, you know, with that, teaching and equipping individuals to be prepared for the future. We teach that evaluating our experiences, especially our losses, are a method of future preparation. There's a quote that John Maxwell has in his book, 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. And he says, leadership is about advancing others. It's not about advancing ourselves. So we want to concentrate on other individuals and help them succeed, help them get what they want, not just get what they want, but help them to grow and help them go through life challenges. Then we're advancing. We're creating what's referred to as servant leadership. We're serving someone else. We're not just thinking about ourselves. And so first of the year, I started thinking, believing one of the things that my family does at the beginning of the year, we don't necessarily have New Year's resolutions, but what I ask everyone in my family to do is to write down what are the goals or what are the things that I want to work on in this year. And I have a list of items. My wife has a list of items. My children do as well. One of the things on my list is simply to grab a hold, to invite other men around and us talk about leadership skills and leadership abilities. And so once a week, there are six other guys and I, we get together for about an hour and we go through, we're reading a book by Mark Miller, but we'll take other books as well. We'll read through it and then we'll discuss a chapter. We'll discuss, you know, how do you handle these things or what do you think about this or what do you think about that? And it's just a collective time where each one of us brings a different perspective and makes us think, makes us ponder. And then we're able to take those things and actually either think through them or apply them or something of that nature. So that's what's new on my list. I think that's what you're referencing, that what we talked about the other day.
Absolutely. I've got a question. Well, you know, in one of your tenements, you saw encourage community. How do you talk when in your group that get together and study leadership and mentorship? How do you go about appreciating the people who come from a different point or perspective on life than you do. You know, they're totally different from the religious, political, you know, all those other important things that we think are important. How do you appreciate, how do you teach people to appreciate someone with a different view of life than yours?
A lot of that comes down to maturity. Maturity in the aspect of important to listen. It's important to take the time to listen to someone else's perspective. I mean, typically one person doesn't have all the right answers. I mean, I only know one person that's ever met that qualification, but listening is so important. I don't know of any organization that can say to stay relevant without listening. Being proactive and intentional, systematic, active listening is required to gain understanding of someone else's viewpoint. You know, why do they feel that way? How do they? Where are they getting this? Is this backed by just opinion, or is it backed by, you know, research? What's it backed by? Is it backed by their own personal experience? Which, if it's backed by their own personal experience, you can't say they're wrong. But if I can gain understanding from someone's experience, man, I've grown. A part of serving someone is being able to take the time to listen to them and to learn. Man, a wealth of knowledge is fantastic, especially when it's right in front of you and all you have to do is just listen. Now, if it goes against your grain, well, be mature about it and just soak it in and learn. You know, I'm going to accept that. I don't have to accept it. But, you know, it's part of listening and part of growing, part of learning. So, you know, part of leadership is hungering for wisdom. And hungering for wisdom doesn't come necessarily always from textbooks and books you read and research you find and dissertations. But oftentimes wisdom comes from those who have experienced it. And you're gaining understanding from what they've actually lived through.
Well, I think you hit something on the head when you're talking of a leadership. We, as leaders, if you claim to be a leader, if someone sets themselves as a leader of an organization, leader of men, or leader of women, whatever it may be, when you claim to be a leader, we don't have the luxury or the privilege of saying, okay, I only want to lead people that are like me. A leader, once you set yourself up as a leader, you have set yourself up to serve all that want to come, all that want to follow. And I think in our society today, that's one of the biggest drawbacks I see among people who classify themselves as leaders. They only want to lead those that are easily to lead, that those that are like them, the followers that have the same, you know, philosophies. A true leader can, like you said in your first one, encourage community by embracing, appreciating, and loving others. That's where a true leader is. In the military, it's a great example. You could have a leader, a captain, a major, a colonel, or whatever, and they may be of one political party, but they're leading people of all different political persuasions under a common purpose. So I think, you know, what you're doing is tremendous, because I think it's truly lacking in our society today. We only want to lead those that are Democrats or those that are Republicans or those that are Tea Party. And a leader has got to be willing to set himself up and say, I'm willing to lead all that want to know what I know or follow where I want to go. And so I commend you for that encouraging community. I think that's something that's lacking.
Yeah, thank you. Go ahead.
How do you inspire hope to those who, in our society, we have grown so negative? How do you inspire hope to those that have known no hope?
It comes back down to listening. And depending on the individual, it takes time to cultivate a relationship that's built on trust. And when that relationship begins to form and trust begins to develop, then you have that opportunity to start planting seeds of hope, planting seeds of potential that is within a student. I'm in a unique position that I'm visiting with students that come from all different types of backgrounds, some affluent, some extremely poor, different races, different ethnic backgrounds. And so, but the interesting caveat is that they have hope already instilled in them, in that they're in hopes that the degree that they're going to pursue is going to get them to, hopefully get them to a place where they're going. Sometimes it's difficult even in that situation because of the background that they've grown up in. Sometimes it's different with different generations as well. Sometimes there are some generations that understand that the harder I work, then the better it's going to be. And then there are others that have, unfortunately, some type of entitlement mentality. And even breaking through that a little bit is tough. Social barriers, you have different thoughts and of just perspective of these are the things I've grown up with and I've never been told anything different. And so you have those mental calibers that are on some people and they have to be broken. But it all comes down to, again, listening and building trust. So I'm in a little bit of unique because it's kind of already kick-started for me when I'm helping a student, but not all the time, not everyone. But the inspiring hope, I think so many people get knocked down, and they either get knocked down and they can't get back up, or they've been knocked down so many times that it's very challenging to get back up and go again. And so for those people, I just want to say, you know, get with someone that will encourage you and that will motivate you and inspire hope in you that you can pursue your dreams. You can become what you, you know, we live in an amazing country where that can happen.
That's true, true. Listen, we're going to wrap this up. You said something really, really critical that I want to focus on. And, you know, whenever I go around and give talks, right, you know, just even out one-on-one talk, one of my biggest pet peeves in this country today is when people say, when you have, you know, our daughter Marley goes to Colorado State University and she's majoring in equine industry. And people are always asking her, what are you going to do when you get out? What job are you going to get? In my opinion, and you've just kind of touched on this, you don't go to a university to get a job. You get a degree to get where you're going. And you said that. You said they hope to get a degree to get them where they're going. I think one of the biggest things, the biggest flaws we have in this country today is we assume an education is to get us a job. An education is to get us to where we're going, and you said that very eloquently. And I'm glad you work for a university because I think when you go to a university to get a job, you limit yourself because you have no idea what you're capable of when you go in. Because when you come out after 4 or even 5 years of getting that four-year degree, you should be a completely different person than when you come in. So from a layman's point of view, to hear someone that's directly involved at the university to teach young people that a degree gets them where they're going, not necessarily gets them a job, is refreshing. Because I think we as a society settle for jobs way too easily when we could own the companies, we could build the companies. There's so much more than just getting a job. So, Rob, I want to thank you for that. Now, before I let you go, for those that want to learn more about mentoring, more about leadership, those that say, hey, I think this Dr. Rob Harris can give me some hope, how do they get in contact with you? How can they reach out and touch you?
They're welcome to call. Let me give you my cell phone.
Do it.
What?
417 what? Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. 417-327-5550.
Okay, that's it. Everybody listen, it's 417-327-5550. That's Dr. Rob Harris out of Bolivar, Missouri, correct?
That's correct.
I'm impressed. I'm impressed. Rob, it has been indeed a pleasure. I'm so proud of you, man, because I remember when you were back in high school and you're starting to throw kicks, and now you can outkick me. I was really, really impressed. So, Rob, tell everybody I said hi, and try to stay warm. Keep out of the snow. Okay, my friend?
Will do. Will do.
Take care. Love you, brother.
Love you. Take care.
That was a wonderful, wonderful opportunity. For those that are interested, again, Rob's number is 417-327-5550. Rob has a great perspective on life. He can teach many people a lot of things, how to overcome adversity. Let's move topics to, while you're watching NASCAR, now think about this, while you're watching March Madness, or even those of you that are playing Candy Crush, the Republicans, with some help from the right-leaning Supreme Court, are just about able to take control over the national parks. People may ask, well, but Harry, what do they want to take control of the federal lands for? And the answer is simple. America is proving we can be bought and we're willing to sell what God entrusted to us. We have gone from proud servants of the land to slaves of corporations. Thanks to the Supreme Court case, corporations have political power far superior to the ones you and I have. Politicians have proven they can be bought and sold by the entity that contributes the largest sum of money. Yes, politicians can be bought. I know that surprises some of you, but people can be lured into a delusional realm of political righteousness, and conservative Supreme Court allows corporations supreme control. Corporations have more control of the American people than at any other time in our history. If you have taken a position believing you are protecting democracy, you may be right or you may be wrong. Look again. The Supreme Court, right this session, is about to take the rights away from you and I when it comes to federal lands. You and I used to control about half of the land west of the Rockies. Corporations, many of them international corporations, want to destroy your forest, poison your waters, and steal your precious minerals. Using the false arguments of states' rights, large corporations are using lobbyists to steal away from your children what God gave you. Our founding fathers believed you and I would understand the importance of keeping lands away from those that would destroy it for the sake of quarterly profits. You and I are as much to blame as those that would steal away the gift that was given to us to protect. Land was entrusted. This land was entrusted to you and I. We have betrayed that trust. Millions of Americans yell and scream and vote to keep their guns while their land is being stolen. People march in the streets to allow people to marry who they choose while the water they drink is polluted by an international conglomerate. Americans are screaming at the top of their lungs about health care. And while they're yelling, our land is being stolen. If you are a protector of the Second Amendment, if you believe in equal rights for all Americans, if you believe in a healthy population, or if you believe in the American Constitution, why are you sitting on your butt playing Facebook games while your home is being vandalized? It is time for you to stand up and protect public lands and deny those large corporations the ability to destroy what was entrusted to you to protect. The vandals are in your house, and we, you and I, let them in. And that's all I got to say about that topic. At this point in time, I'm going to flip it over and let's see if Robin's microphone works yet. Robin, are you there? No, can't hear you, babe. I mean, I can hear you deep, deep, deep well. I guess the internet here, the Wi-Fi, may not be all that good. Why don't you play us a song real quick and let's see if we can get your microphone fixed.
And wings. Well, you
That would help if my mic was on. Can you hear me now? Oh, this is awesome. This is awesome. For those that are just joining us, we're sitting in RV Park in Tulsa, Oklahoma, in our 38-foot fifth wheel, having the time of our lives, visiting old friends, and we're having some technical difficulties. We don't know whether it's a Wi-Fi in this area and only allows one of us to talk, or if it's a cruel Tulsa trick played upon the Floridian girl up here visiting on my proud state. You know, our attitude determines our altitude. We've all heard that. What determines our attitude, you know, really can be as simple as how you talk to yourself and how you talk to others. Attitude is not just what you think about. Attitude is what determines your philosophy. Your true attitude is revealed in your talk, both to yourself and to others. If you think you have a great attitude, but life always presents you with lemons, monitor what you talk about. If you expect more out of life, you better inspect what you say about life. It has been said that you must inspect what you expect. Consciously, I want each of you to consciously make a decision to stop saying what you don't want and start saying what you do want. If you constantly speak critical of yourself and you know, critical of others, why would you be surprised when you get those things that are, you will receive what you focus upon. And if you focus upon the negative others or the negative of yourself, you're going to get more of it. Your talk is a reflection of your focus. You may not notice it. You really may not. But trust me, those around you do. You must change your talk to change your life. And here are some examples of speech reframing. You've got to reframe your speech. So instead of saying things that no one ever comes to my events or no one ever comes to my parties, you should start saying, what if people came to my event? What if people would come to my parties? Instead of saying, what if they say no? You should say, what if they say yes? Instead of saying, what if they do not join me? You should say, what if they and their friends join me? Instead of saying, what if this doesn't work out? You should say, what if this works out better than we ever anticipated? And the list goes on and on and on. I hope you get the point. Too often times, we focus on the wrong things. I remember world champion Tommy Williams told me a long time ago, if you focus on not getting hit, you're going to get hit. And he was right. We spend so much of our time programming ourselves for failure. Our attitude seems to be always set upon failure first. I have learned that when you start thinking and saying what you profess to want, your mind shifts and pulls you in that direction. You know, I have found that you unknowingly confuse yourself and your speech when they're not in congruence with your actions. People in a boat, I mean, this is simple. People in a boat must row in the same direction in order for progress to take place. Our language, our talk, our self-talk affects our performance and the performance of those around us. Now, here's a scenario. A teenager says to a parent, I need $10. You as a parent need to say, that kind of language doesn't work here. We got plenty of money. But that's not how you get $10. Teach your teenager to say, how can I earn $10? And then you turn around and say it to yourself. If you need extra money, don't say, I need an extra $100. Think to yourself, how can I earn that extra $100? There is magic in those words. There is much power in our words, in our actions, in our thoughts. There's much power when they come together and form a positive, purposeful attitude. There is plenty of money here. There's plenty of money in the world. There is plenty for everybody, but you got to learn the magic words to use it. And I say magic like tongue-in-cheek, but in reality, they're your words. Your philosophy really must match your purpose. Your philosophy is displayed by your thoughts and your actions and your words. Those produce the fruits. You determine your fruits, not just by hard work, but by your philosophy. The once great Jim Rohn said, you can't go to the soil and say, give me harvest. You know the soil will smile and say, who is this clown that brings me his need and brings me no seed? And if you said to the soil, I've got the seed, and if I plant it, would you work while I sleep? And the soil will say, no problem, give me the seed. Go to sleep, and I'll be working while you sleep. You see, people, your words and your actions will work on your thoughts while you sleep. Learn the self-discipline of positive talk to yourself and to others. I've seen it work on many people. I've seen people where their words destroy their actions. You know, some of this self-talk, positive self-talk, will take some time to replace all those years of self-doubt and the negative talk, you know, that flows so easily in our society. But once you do, miracles will happen. They may seem unrelated, but they arise from the congruency of your thoughts, your talk, and your action. You know, we are to others And Robin and I agree with that. You should be kind to others. But I'm telling you, what is more important is the way we talk to ourselves. Be kind to yourself and speak the words of truth and encouragement. Do we have a song now? Let's play a little song now. Let's go something. I'm not sure what it is, but let's play a little song. And we're going to come back with our network marketing segment and wrap this show up for this evening. Never Wanted to Die. You know, Mike Craig is a good friend of ours back in Jacksonville, Florida, and his Christian rock group it keeps going on and on. It's a phenomenal, phenomenal group, Farewell to Fear. And what opened the show always opens our show. Well, normally always opens our show and closes our show is our dear, dear friend, Amy Hendrickson. You can always catch her at amyhendricksonmusic.com. She is, again, a good friend of ours, and her latest album, Apples for Apollo, we really appreciate. Now let's go to something that's really, really dear, near and dear to my heart. You know, tomorrow night in Tulsa, Oklahoma, they have the Tulsa Market Party with Miriam. It is at the Bass Pro Shop at 6:30. It's a meet and greet, and at 7, the presentation. If you have any questions, contact us here at legacyforum@yahoo.com. You know, the global economic transformation exposes the flaws in traditional marketing. Traditional marketing is transactional with a focus on making the sale. Too often, the sale is a one-time encounter, and too often, people view that as a zero-sum game. Relationship marketing is focused on building and sustaining a mutually beneficial connection between the business and the customer. The encounter is a win-win relationship. You know, today's widespread online social networks where users are sharing vast amounts of personal information on a regular basis, often too much information. But relationship marketing is really being taken to a whole new level. When we know more about each other, it's much easier to really personalize the entire experience of interacting with companies and with people. Relationship marketing should build and shape customer journeys that yield value to both the customer and the company. You know, business models, you know, I talk about this all the time. It's one of my passions. Business models are changing all across the world. You know, 50 years ago, we talked about mass production technology. Then it went to lean production technology. And with the millennials coming up, relationship marketing is the way of doing business. Look at Amazon. I mean, look at all the large companies that use the Internet and use word-of-mouth marketing. That's all relationship marketing is. And you think about it, would you rather have your best friend earn money off of your product, or would you rather just give it to a large, you know, corporation that you never know whether they're going to help you or not? Let's try to keep things local. Relationship marketing is the way to do it. And when you grow tired of doing the same thing over and over again, when you're tired of using that same business model, you know, and we end up doing it over and over again and hoping, thinking that things will change, well, we're here to help. When you realize that the 40-40-40 rule isn't working, when you realize your fear of becoming self-reliant is not so bad, you can do this. You know, contact us, and we'll do our best to help you understand there is a better way. Relationship marketing is an avenue of business that is available to all of us. A little hard work, a little determination, a little persistency, and you can amaze what you can accomplish. You know, contact us at legacyforum@yahoo.com. The key thing is in relationship marketing, if you want more out of life, if you truly want a better way, if you want more, you must become more. And now our next segment is Weird News.
Weird News.
I love that portion. You know, I read volumes of information every day. I do. You know, some of it's useful, and, you know, some of it, you know, it's really not so useful. And here's a book that I thought about this for a long time. I thought some of you should know about. It's a book that I got to confess I haven't really read, but some of you should. It is a book informing us on how to cope with an awkward romantic moment. Get your pencil and paper out, because some of you may need this. It is a self-help book, and Robin and I hope it helps you. It's entitled, are you ready? It's entitled, How to Poo on a Date, The Lover's Guide to Toilet Etiquette.
Weird News.
Well, thank you for joining us this evening. I know some of you were bored of hearing my voice because of lovely Robin. For whatever reason, we had some technical difficulty. But email us if you have any questions, if you have any comments, you want something, another topic for a future week. And next week we have another guest. But if you have a topic that you want us to know about, email us at legacyforum@yahoo.com. And as Robin would say, as she always ends our program, before the ending music, now go out there and make someone else happy.
Well, the earth and the sky passes us by. See how time touches everything. I'm dreaming of kings and secular things, and I'm wishing the waters run dry out of my mind. I know I'm craving innocence, and we, well, we nip at the heels while spinning our deals. We can't claim innocence, no. So now I'll drink to the past and cover my tracks. Just to travel through space and time, you with the moon by your side, have nowhere to hide. As the dawn brings a fire alive and ignites the sky, so try to find innocence in the wise. They just sit by and they die. They can't claim innocence, no. Beautiful thing is a love that can bring, well, just 1 ounce of innocence alive, and there it will thrive and more than survive. Although time touches everything, you, well, you bring that to me, the most valuable thing. They make me feel innocent, and I, well, I know I'm alive, and I'm reveling in a love that is innocent. Well, well, the earth and the sky, it passes us by. See how time touches everything. I'm dreaming of kings and secular things, and I'm wishing orders run.